Please be seated. We call 01-3352 State v. Edwards. Michael R. Kloss, Assistant Attorney General of the Department of Justice, representing the state of Wisconsin. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Justices. The appeal before the court this afternoon presents a very narrow issue of jurisdiction. And precisely the jurisdiction of the Court of Appeals to hear a state appeal from an order denying a motion for reconsideration. As a sub-issue or a subtext, this issue, as it developed in this case, also involves, in the state's view, an erroneous understanding of this court's recent decision in State versus Davis, which construed the Intrastate Detainer Act. Very briefly, the defendant, Mr. Edwards, was charged in Racine County with substantial battery and intimidating a witness. At the time these charges were pending, Mr. Edwards was an inmate in the Wisconsin Correctional Institution. After these charges were filed, he made a request to the warden for a speedy disposition under the agreement on, under the Intrastate Detainer Act. Under that act, an inmate who makes a request, and there is in fact a request sent by certified mail to the district attorney, the district attorney within 120 days after receipt has an obligation to bring him to trial unless there is some extension for a good cause. What happened in this case is, nothing happened in this case for a number of months. Eventually, Mr. Edwards, by his attorney, filed a motion to dismiss, claiming that there was a violation of the Intrastate Detainer Act. Trial court held a hearing, made a finding that the request for speedy disposition was lost in the mails and never received by the DA. The trial court also acknowledged that under the Detainer Act, the obligation, the 120-day obligation, begins from actual receipt by the district attorney of the request. Nevertheless, the trial court said, "I have no alternative," and he entered a judgment of dismissal. So that judgment of dismissal was September 10th of 2001. Now, what the district attorney in Racine County did was file a motion for reconsideration, pointing out that the original judgment was incomplete, and citing the trial court to this court's decision in State versus Davis, which places an obligation on the district, places an obligation on the trial court to consider certain factors, exercise its discretion, and decide whether any dismissal under the Interstate Detainer Act should be with prejudice or without prejudice.
Counsel,
yes.
That's on the motion for reconsideration citing State versus Davis?
That is correct.
Was that the Court of Appeals opinion cited? Because our opinion wasn't issued until December 27th of 2001.
Good question.
I might be wrong. I have before me not all of the dates, but for instance, the Court of Appeals decision notes, it's the brief Court of Appeals decision, notes that the state filed a notice of appeal in the very first sentence I'm reading from the Court of Appeals decision. The state filed a notice of appeal from an order of the circuit court dated October 23rd, 2001. I took that to mean the notice of reconsideration had to be before that date, otherwise they wouldn't have filed the appeal.
That is correct. I just pulled out a copy of the, you're correct, this court's decision. So the State versus Davis decision necessarily that was presented or referred to in the court or in the motion for reconsideration would have been the Court of Appeals. Because as I think
I don't remember the holding in the Court of Appeals. Do you, State versus? I hardly remember the. I mean, I do remember now that I've been reminded our holding. I just don't know if we have.
Court of Appeals affirmed the Circuit Court's order holding that the legislature intended that a circuit court have the discretion to dismiss a criminal case with or without prejudice when the state fails to bring the criminal case on or for trial within the 120 days.
Right. There was a general recognition that there was a discretion inherent in the trial court. As my recollection, just to put this in context, is that the state sought a petition for review arguing that there's the Brownsdorfer case and whether or not that applied here. And in that circumstance, no prejudice was be presumed because it was a dismissal order before prejudice. What I think the Supreme Court's decision, State versus David, qualified the Court of Appeals. First of all, they affirmed, this Court affirmed that the court, that the trial court has discretion to dismiss based on the facts and circumstances, either with prejudice or without prejudice. What this court disagreed with in Davis is that what the trial court did in that case was inappropriate, because the trial court treated it as if it, as a matter of law, in every case there had to be dismissal without prejudice. So I think that would be the distinction in terms of the progression of Davis to the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court.
But at any rate, the motion for reconsideration cited the Court of Appeals.
It would have. It would have. But it did ask, and I think correctly based even on the Court of Appeals decision, that there had to be an exercise of discretion by the trial court, either with prejudice, without prejudice. This was not an issue that was even addressed or raised when the original motion to dismiss was presented to the trial court. Okay, get back very quickly to the procedural history here. The trial court dismissed with prejudice, even though it acknowledged that the request had been lost in the mail. It felt it was obliged to do so, because otherwise there would be no remedy. The state filed a notice of appeal from the order denying a motion for reconsideration, just because in the sequence of events here, it was no longer timely to file the notice of appeal from the original dismissal order. And as I point out in my brief, I question whether the state was ever in a position to appeal that original order, because it wasn't complete. It wasn't final under controlling law. A final order under controlling law, State versus Davis, requires the court to exercise its discretion on the record and indicate whether the dismissal is with prejudice or without prejudice.
But maybe I'm confused on the dates here, Counsel.
Yes.
But as I read in the papers that I got in front of me and over the weekend, that the time for filing an appeal ran on October 25th. You have 45 days from the date of the appeal, which was September 10th. That was the date of September 10th was when your appeal was dismissed, right?
That is correct.
So 45 days from there would be October 25th.
That is correct, Your Honor.
You filed your motion for reconsideration, and that was denied on October 23rd.
Correct.
So you still had 2 days to file your a notice to file your appeal from the original dismissal, did you not?
I believe the district attorney did at that point.
I mean, yeah.
Yes.
Whoever
right.
it was.
Right.
But they didn't.
They did not.
So doesn't that really put us into that classification of cases whereby if we grant this, we're essentially allowing you to do with to do with one hand what you're not allowed to do with the other?
I think.
Because you still had time to file your appeal, and you didn't.
Okay.
Not you, you know, the state.
I understand. I think, as I pointed out in my brief, the order we wanted reviewed, the order which the state was concerned with, would have been the order denying the motion for reconsideration, because that is the order in which the court specifically exercised its discretion and ruled that the dismissal was with prejudice. I'm not sure that if we had appealed the original order, that issue would have been before the court, because there would have been no exercise of discretion.
When did this court have then, or the Court of Appeals, have had to decide whether it was with or without prejudice and then sent it back?
I think that's what would have happened, is it may well have been premature. That could have been one ruling and sent it back. It could have been that we were appealing from a non-final order. That's a possible conclusion by the court. It just put the state in a kind of untenable position here as to where to jump. Because what happened when this case was originally heard by the trial court is that the trial court was not aware of the State versus Davis decision or aware of its obligation to exercise discretion and make a dismissal with or without prejudice. This did not occur until the district attorney made a motion for reconsideration, presented the State versus Davis case to the trial court and asked the trial court to exercise its discretion. So I really believe that is the order, the final order in this case.
Well, it sounds more that motion for reconsideration may have been inaccurately labeled. Wouldn't it have been better for the district attorney to simply have asked for a clarification based on State versus Davis and then appealed once he's got that clarification?
As I understand the law and orders and motions of reconsideration, if you're asking the trial court to address a new issue not addressed in the earlier proceeding and order, then you have a motion for reconsideration. I suppose maybe you're getting technical here, but this really is asking the court to address a new issue.
It really is or is not?
It is asking the court to address a new issue because it's, in reality, in terms of whether this prosecution can continue or not, is a decisive issue.
The court never – I'm going to follow up on Justice
yes.
Babbage's question. The court never reconsidered – technically, I think, any issue here. Let me advance that anyway. As I recall reading some of this stuff, the court treated it, it seems to me, like a motion for clarification. The court said, with prejudice, and then the court said, and I'm going to deny your motion for reconsideration. So I'm not sure the court even entertained it denied any motion for reconsideration. It's not like the court said, okay, I'll grant your motion for reconsideration. You're right. I should have put with or without prejudice, and now let's say I'll tell you it's going to be with prejudice, and this is why. And the way that procedurally it came before the court, the way the court addressed it, I think, is didn't deny it. It's not that I didn't deny I reconsidered it, then denied the relief, didn't even reconsider it. I think.
Well, as I read the transcript, and I suppose this is subject to different views, as I read the transcript, the trial court did acknowledge in the course of its discussion with the attorneys that it was not aware of State versus Davis and that State versus Davis did impose upon the trial court an obligation to exercise its discretion.
Now, that's the Court of Appeals.
No,
this is the
trial court.
Well, I know. I'm talking about the Court of Appeals, State versus Davis, because Supreme Court versus Davis didn't exist at the time.
Okay.
Did the Court of Appeals, State versus Davis, do what you just said?
Impose an obligation to exercise discretion?
Yeah, I see.
Yes.
You always have that obligation.
Yes, it did. Yes, Justice.
I would just for clarification, I have the transcript here, and I was looking at page 9. Now, mine may have been entitled incorrectly, but it says copy of hearing on reconsideration. Now, that may or may not be the case, but on page 9, Judge Simonic Justice Bradley does speak of, in the Davis case, the dismissal was with prejudice. And then he goes on and says, in the reasoning given by the trial judge, and I believe you are correct that this is the Court of Appeals, by the trial judge, Judge Klossner in Dane County, but he does refer to that case in this particular motion. That is the motion heard on the 23rd of October 2001.
That is correct. That's my understanding, Justice, yes.
Counsel,
yes.
Do you really want to win this case? Now, I say that because I see this is the Department of Justice on one side. That's the public defender on the other side. And if you win, I think the state public defender is going to take note of this case, and they're going to say, we can have quite liberal interpretations of motions for reconsideration, and the fact that a matter was decided on the 23rd before the time to appeal ran out, there's still 2 days left. But we get a whole another 45 days after the 23rd. Aren't they going to? I'd almost think the public defender would want to lose this case to you.
Well, I guess we're going to give them an opportunity to present their position on that. But I understand your point of view, Justice.
All I'm saying is, suppose I was biased in favor of the Department of Justice, but I might be concerned about what you're asking for. You might get what you're asking for. Kind of allay my fears here.
Okay. Well, I think in this particular case, we have the decisive issue to be cited in this case is whether or not it's dismissal with or without prejudice. Because that, if it's without prejudice, the state can refile. It may have to go through another preliminary hearing and so forth, but the prosecution is still alive. If it's with prejudice, the case is done. And the position that I've taken is that when that original order of dismissal was entered, the decisive issue had not been decided. The trial court had not exercised its discretion. It was not even aware of its obligation under State versus Davis. So I don't think the court or the state is really trying to liberalize the law on motions for reconsideration, because I don't really think that's what's at issue here. That law is well settled. I think what the state is saying in this particular case, the State versus Davis decisions have been misconstrued or misunderstood so that there is a presumption of prejudice every time there's an order of dismissal under the Detainer Act.
Now, you're talking about the Court of Appeals.
Court of Appeals, correct. And the state tried to make this argument, tried to make this distinction even in its presentation to the Court of Appeals, and the response we got was, well, the first order, we're going to presume it was with prejudice, because otherwise there is no appropriate remedy. And when I read that to be a complete misinterpretation of what this Court decided in State versus Davis, and an inappropriate basis to deny the state a right of appeal.
That issue isn't before us. Is it?
Which issue?
The appropriateness of the circuit court's rationale. I mean, I thought the issue that was before us was whether or not the Court of Appeals has jurisdiction.
Correct. And I was addressing the Court of Appeals rationale. I wasn't referring to the circuit court. I was referring to the Court of Appeals, and you are correct. That jurisdictional issue is the issue that is before the court. I guess I would take the position that this is not an expansion or liberalization of the rule on motions for reconsideration, which require that there be a new issue. It just seems to this attorney and to the state that this is a classic case where a critical and decisive issue that is, dismissal with or without prejudice, was not addressed in the original order and was not presented to the trial court for decision and a decision made on it until an order was entered on the motion for reconsideration. For those reasons, the State would respectfully submit that an appeal from the order denying the motion for reconsideration was appropriate, and the Court of Appeals had jurisdiction to hear the case.
Mr. Kloss, the problem with these cases, and we've had a couple, and the issue is this an extension of the time, which we won't permit, or is this a real attempt to get a final order, because no final order had been issued before. Now here, a dismissal with or without prejudice is a final order, right? Both would be. If you dismiss with prejudice, that's final order.
That's correct.
If you dismiss without prejudice, it's a final order.
That's correct.
For that particular case, right?
That's correct. And what we had here, respectfully, is we don't know which it is.
Okay, but either one, you got a final order of dismissal. That's my point.
Okay, correct.
Now you seek, and frankly, I don't care what it's called, whether it's called clarification, reconsideration. Sure, I can think of other names if I put my head to it, and I'm sure you have. And you've got a final order, and now, which order do you appeal from? You appealed from the second order, right?
That is correct.
And in this case, because you still had 45 days to appeal from that first order, even after you got the second order, it looks as if you were not attempting to extend the time, because you had time.
That is correct.
That's in your favor. But that doesn't change the substance of this issue. So what is the test under the cases, and how do you apply it here to determine whether you really had a final order that you should have appealed from?
The problem is that, as the Court suggests, if it was with prejudice or without prejudice, it's a final order. It would be a final order, but we don't know what it is.
But you don't know what
it is. And State v. Davis says we can't presume that it's either with or without prejudice, because that's the proposition of law that was specifically rejected in Davis.
And once you took an appeal, you couldn't go back to the trial court and say, we appealed, but we don't really know what we're appealing from.
I don't know what the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals may kick us out on our bund if we came up without an order that where the Court exercises jurisdiction as required by State versus Davis. It kind of puts the State in an awkward position here, because here we got an order that does not indicate the Court exercises discretion. The statute doesn't say with or without prejudice. This Court says, Court, there can't be a presumption. The presumption in Braunsdorf has been rejected. The Court must exercise its discretion on the record. I think what the State tried to do here was reasonable. The first order was incomplete. The trial court was not aware of a decisive case from this Court or from the Court of Appeals. It seemed to me the most expeditious way for the State to proceed is to advise the trial court of the controlling law of this decisive issue that had to be made and allow the trial court to exercise its discretion. And then once the court had done that, we had a final and complete order in compliance with State versus Davis. The State filed a notice of appeal. I don't see that based on the facts in this case, that the State is asking the Court to expand the rule about when orders or when you can appeal from order for reconsideration. That this case is very fact specific because of the fact that it involves the Interstate Detainer Act and a recent decision from this court as to what the obligation of the trial court is.
I ask this question.
Yes.
The Court of Appeals decision was issued on February 22, 2001. And the hearing was held on September 5, 2001. And the dismissal came on September 10, 2001. Why shouldn't the state be penalized by not bringing this case to the attention of the court?
You're referring why the prosecutor in the original hearing was not aware of State versus Davis?
Yeah.
The state, defense, or the trial court were aware. I mean, that's obvious from the record. That's what caused the initial order to be, in my opinion, incomplete and why a motion for reconsideration was required. I mean, I don't know if you want to penalize the state in its ability to prosecute a criminal case because the prosecutor wasn't up to date in the most recent decision. I don't think that would be appropriate.
Well, would the same rule apply to the defense?
Would they be able to bring this case? No, I would agree. I think any party in the same position should be able to bring a controlling case which it's not just a matter of case law, it's a matter of requiring the trial court to exercise its discretion. And if the trial court and either party is not aware of this, I think it's appropriate by motion to bring the trial court's attention to the case and ask the court to exercise its discretion, whether that was the state or the defendant. I notice my red light is on.
Thank you
very much.
Mr. Kloss, you have 5 minutes in rebuttal. Martha K. Askins, Assistant State Public Defender, representing Larry Edwards.
Thank you. Again, my name is Martha Askins. I represent the defendant, Larry Edwards. I wanted to begin by addressing Justice Prosser's question. I think, in terms of whether or not the state really wants to win this case, I think perhaps the bigger concern is not whether the SPD or the AG's office should win this case, but is what this would mean for civil litigation. Would a party who has a private client who has paid that attorney to, you know, process the litigation, when is the end of the litigation then? What would the attorney do who, whether or not they realize that they missed a deadline, would the litigant who lost consistently be filing new so-called reconsideration motions? So in terms of the balance, in terms of public defender versus attorney general, that's certainly one part of the equation, but I think a bigger part of the equation may be civil litigation.
Well, could I follow up?
Sure.
Justice Bablish asked a line of questions and pointed out that the decision, I believe, came on the 23rd motion for reconsideration on the 29th, and then a decision was made on the 23rd, an adverse decision, and there were 2 days left. 2 days left, Justice Bablish says. Do you want us to glom onto that as an explanation why the state loses?
I think the state loses because I think the first order was final, appealable, and should have been appealed from. I take issue with the state's characterization that this was in some kind of a limbo because of State versus Davis, and I'm speaking of the Court of Appeals State versus Davis. State versus Davis said, and I'm referring to the Court of Appeals case, said, the court must exercise its discretion, point number one. Then they went on to analyze whether Judge Klassner had, in fact, exercised his discretion and concluded that he had. This court said, we agree the trial court must decide whether the dismissal is with or without prejudice, but we disagree with the Court of Appeals. We don't think Judge Klassner applied the proper standard, and the Court went on to list a number of factors for a circuit court to consider when looking at this very issue. Now, what we have in this case was the trial court said he made the finding that the paperwork got lost in the mail, essentially. Nobody's at fault. The defendant did what he was supposed to do. The state just didn't get the paperwork. Now, whether or not the state should have had some sort of system for tracking these was kind of in the sidelines of this case, but ultimately the court said, state, you didn't do anything wrong either, but in case of a tie, the benefit goes to the defendant. And that's essentially what he said. He said, you know, I've got a defendant on the one hand. He didn't do anything wrong. I've got the state on the other hand. They didn't do anything wrong. When it's a push, I think you referred to it, the defendant wins. I think that's the exercise of discretion. And I think that what the state should have done, if they didn't agree with that exercise of discretion, if they thought the court had the law wrong, why not just appeal from that decision? To me, in looking at what the body of case law is in Wisconsin, the exercise of discretion just shows how did you get to that decision? And I think Judge Simonic was quite clear in how he got to that decision. He said, in case of a tie, I'll give it to the defendant. And if the state didn't like that result, they should have appealed that.
How do you reconcile, just offhand, 971.11.2, as far as the time starting, in the sense that there was 120 days, and it talks about
Frankly, Justice Wilcox, that issue is not before the court because the state didn't appeal from the first order. The only thing that's before the court is whether or not this is a live appeal because of the prejudice issue. So I don't think the court has to reach that question. If the state is correct that the court didn't exercise its discretion, then similarly, it seems to me that that would have been an appropriate order to appeal because the state could have argued on appeal, we win because the trial court failed to exercise its discretion, just like lots of cases are brought.
Okay, I'm an assistant district attorney, and I have stacks of files on my desk this high. You say I can appeal it, which means I spend the weekends writing some kind of brief to the Court of Appeals, or I can find out from the judge, did the judge mean without prejudice, which just means I can give it to my secretary and have it refiled?
DA has a couple of options at that point. One is the DA can spend the short amount of time that it takes to file the notice of appeal, which of course is a simple document, and simultaneously file a motion for reconsideration. Another option for the state, whether it's the AG or the district attorney, is to do what public defenders have been doing in the TPR cases before the revision of the rules, which is you file your notice of appeal because we have a non-extendable deadline, and then we file a motion to remand the case to the trial court so that the court can address some issue that it has failed to address. Either way, the appellant has preserved their timelines by getting the notice of appeal filed and then saying, okay, I can take a breath now. I have preserved jurisdiction. Now, do I want to ask the trial court to reconsider? Do I want to ask the Court of Appeals, look, Court of Appeals, your resources will be much better served if we just take care of this one thing, and then it can go back. So I think there are some other options for the state that could have and probably should have been followed. One thing that I just wanted to talk a little bit about was it seems to me that it was clear from the context of this case that the order was with prejudice. And I think with Chief Justice Abrahamson's question about what is the test, I mean, certainly the case law has talked a little bit about looking at the context of both the decision itself, the written document, and also what the court says. And so in looking at those things, it seems to me, and I think this is what the Court of Appeals was really trying to say, is Judge Simonic says he walks. That's pretty, you know, it's vernacular for it's over, he gets out of this one, it's, you know, he has escaped prosecution on this. And then he says, now this may very well be a good case to go up on appeal because I've made the ruling the state, according to the testimony, didn't receive notice. So Judge Simonic identifies the issue that you raised, Justice Wilcox, which is, you know, is this really fair that he gets to walk based on the failure of the state to actually get notice? I think looking at the context of the case, it looks like it's with prejudice, and I think that they should have taken it as that. The other thing that's a little odd to me is, and one of the reasons I've been sort of going around and around about this case, is the failure of the state to make any argument in either its reconsideration motion or on the record. On the one hand, the state says in its brief that the only reason it appealed was so that it could appeal the fact that the dismissal was with prejudice. And yet, at the motion for reconsideration, the state didn't make any argument why the case should be dismissed with or should not be dismissed with prejudice. So it really left the court with the same thing it had in the first place. In neither the written motion nor an argument to the court at the hearing, as I mentioned before, well, this court named a bunch of factors for the court to consider in dismissing with or without prejudice. Obviously, that didn't exist at the time, so we can't rely on that. But why not? Why didn't the prosecutor say, Judge, you know, I think that the fact that this was lost in the mail really comes to our benefit, and Davis means we win on this. The other thing I would mention is that this litigation is sort of assuming that nobody knew about Davis. And I'm not sure that that's a fair assumption to make.
If I can interrupt, I bring it back a little bit. For me, this case rises or falls on whether the issue raised, i.e., dismissal with or without prejudice, is a new issue. Because Vanderhagen, or whatever case that is, says that. Now, you address that in your brief, but I would like you to see if you can rephrase that a little more for me as to why you believe this is not a new issue. You cited a lot of cases at me, but I'm not sure that you ever really sold the car, you know, whether or not you really tied it down. So I ask you, why is this not a new issue?
My first answer is that the first order was with prejudice. So by asking the court, if you don't agree with that, then I would say that it's easier for me to define new issue by what it isn't than what it is, perhaps. I would say new issue does not mean new authority. And for that, I rely on this Mack decision. I would say that the existence of new authority to support the very position that you are putting forth to the judge is not a new issue. So in this case, what the state wanted to achieve was the ability to prosecute Mr. Edwards. Judge Simonic says, you can't prosecute Mr. Edwards. You missed the deadline. Case is over. And then I ask the question, well, what's different about this motion for reconsideration? And I don't see anything that's different in that. What they're trying to achieve is the ability to prosecute Mr. Edwards. So I'm not sure I have a good definition for what's a new issue. Certainly when we look at the cases, courts have made distinctions between what's new and what isn't new. One example of a new issue was estoppel, which hadn't been raised earlier. Well, again, I guess to me it's more what it isn't than what it is, and nothing in this litigation looks new to me.
Assuming that you don't sell your first argument to us, that, in fact, this was left undecided,
mm-hmm.
it seems to me like it's an issue. One side can argue that it was, you would be arguing that this was a dismissal with prejudice because of the words that you used here. Judge, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the state would be saying, no, this was a dismissal without prejudice because of this and this and this and this. To me, that's an issue. You know, an argument has been raised, and there's two sides, at least two sides, and they're going at it. And
mm-hmm. They're arguing about the ultimate result. And that's why I think the state should have appealed from that first order, because mm-hmm. they would have then been arguing, or would have been in the position to argue, that this really meant without prejudice. Or, of course, it could refile, it could reinstitute the litigation and then defend against a double jeopardy claim or whatever. But the Court of Appeals, if the Court of Appeals had been unhappy with the state of the record and said, wait a second, we decided Davis, and I don't think that this court has followed Davis, or the Supreme Court has decided Davis and it hasn't, the circuit court has not applied the factors, then they would remand it for fact-finding. And, you know, to me, if the state concedes that this is a final order.
There's something that comes to mind with regard to how you define a new issue. Is I look at that, if it's a new issue, then the attorneys are arguing, hey, judge, this is how you should decide this. It's prospective. If it's not a new issue, but a clarification, then they're arguing, what did you do? And it seems to me here they're arguing, judge, not what should you do on this new issue before the court, but, hey, judge, what did you do when you dismissed it? And to me, there's a prospective, retrospective sort of. I mean, if the focus is on what should you do as opposed to what did you
what
do.
What did you do? No, that's
that
a
workable or not?
That seems very well put. I think that was sort of what I was struggling with this clarification stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was going back to, you know, what did you really mean when you said he walks? Did you mean it's with or without prejudice? So I would tend to agree that this sounds like what did you do in that previous order? I also wanted to address the Court of Appeals order because the state has argued, of course, that they've applied presumptions and misread Davis. I think that the state is misconstruing the order. Now, could the Court of Appeals order be better drafted? Absolutely. I noted in looking at the order, there's a word missing at one point. They say, we conclude that the very character of the dismissal, as well the language of the circuit court, you know, obviously missing as well as. Could it have been better drafted? Absolutely. But I disagree that when you look at the order in its entirety, that they applied a presumption. They say at one point, and again, the state takes issue with this. Let me get the exact language. The trial court dismissed because the state failed to comply with the speedy disposition requirements of the statute, period. There would be no sanctions for delays by the state if such a dismissal could be without prejudice, period. I think they're referring to what the trial judge said at that point. I think that was a paraphrase of Judge Simonic's statement. Then they go on to say, we conclude that the very character of the dismissal, as well as the language of the circuit court at the time it dismissed the matter, established that dismissal was with prejudice, period. Very clear, they're looking at the context and saying that was dismissal with prejudice. Then they go on to say, since the dismissal must be presumed to have been with prejudice, the motion for reconsideration did not present a new issue. I think when they said presumed, they meant assumed. I don't think they meant presumption in the legal sense of the word. And so for that reason, I think the state is really straining to get something here that they can latch onto to say this appeal is alive and well. I guess in concluding, I would say the following. The state could have and should have appealed from the first order. The trial court did exercise its discretion, and no further documents were contemplated in the course of the litigation. The case was over. The decision was final. Second, the oral comments of the court combined with the judgment of dismissal, and that's what this was a judgment, means that the court dismissed the case with prejudice. Third, the state never argued at the reconsideration hearing why the dismissal should be without prejudice. That was their opportunity to raise the issue. They didn't do that. And finally, the Court of Appeals, as I just argued, did not apply a presumption of any kind. It relied instead on the character of the dismissal as well as the language of the circuit court at the time it dismissed the case. I don't have anything further unless the court has questions.
Hearing none, Ms. Haskins. Thank you. Mr. Kloss?
I just have one brief remark. I believe if a fair view of the record shows that the state was not trying to extend the appeal time. I think what the district attorney was trying to do was to resolve this matter in the most expeditious manner possible. If this court rules against the state here, what the court is saying is that in this situation and analogous situations, the appropriate procedure is to stop the proceedings in the trial court, file a notice of appeal, bring the order, even though the state may believe it's incomplete or deficient in some critical way, and presumably have the Court of Appeals remand the case back to the trial court. I think what the district attorney did here was reasonable. There was a case that was decisive on the issue of whether or not it should be with or without prejudice. That matter was not decided in the first order, and the appropriate thing, in my opinion, is to ask to bring the case to the trial court's attention and ask the trial court to apply the case and exercise its discretion, either with or without prejudice. That had not occurred. If the state was wrong, then it appears that the appropriate thing is, as soon as there's an order that could be possibly construed as final, even though incomplete in some critical way, the state should still go ahead in order to preserve its rights and file a notice of appeal. I don't believe that that's the most expeditious way to handle this type of situation.
Your opposing counsel, I think, said file a notice of appeal and file a motion for clarification or reconsideration. Any comment on that?
I'm trying to recall the law on this, and I might stand corrected, but I don't believe the law permits you to do that. That once you file a notice of appeal, jurisdiction is transferred to the Court of Appeals, and except for some very specific housekeeping types of things, you cannot go back in and file a motion for reconsideration where you're asking the trial court to decide something that's going to affect in a decisive way the merits of the appeal. So I don't think that's possible, but like I said, I stand correct and I haven't researched that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Kloss. Thank you, Ms. Haskins, for your argument on this jurisdictional issue. That concludes our argument on 01-3352 CR State v. Edwards and on our arguments this afternoon. And we are in recess until tomorrow morning at 9:45.